there, it's Eliza D, host of the podcast How to Save the Planet. I interview people whose professions and whose passions have to do with climate change. Today, I'm talking to Tom Campion. Here's a bit about Tom. Tom Campion co-founded Zumiez in 1978 and built it into the world's largest action sports lifestyle retailer. With the success of Zumiez' public offering in 2005, Tom and Sonia Campion took the same values and strategy and started the Campion Foundation, applying their passion and know-how to protect wilderness and homelessness and strengthen the nonprofit sector. They launched the Campion Advocacy Fund in 2014, recognizing that philanthropy alone won't make lasting change. Tom serves on the board of Alaska Wilderness League and was a founding board member of Conservation Northwest. Tom and Sonia were honored in 2011 as Philanthropists of the Year by the Association of Fundraising Professionals in recognition for their creative approach for the catalytic philanthropy. Now, here's my interview with Tom. Hello and welcome, Tom, to How to Save the Planet. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, great. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So could you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Tom Campion. I'm I do a couple different things. I'm a third generation Washingtonian. My dad was a mailman. I grew up in Burien. Now I live in North Seattle. And I'm a businessman. I worked in retail for 56 years, 43 at a company that I started or co-founded. And I'm still the chairman of called Zumiez. And Zumiez has 700 stores around the world. 600 of those are in the United States. And Zumiez is, I started with the first store in North Seattle in 1978. And we went public, which means you can buy or sell Zumiez stock in the company as of 2005. So when we grew it, we were about 250 stores at that time. And I took it public. And at that point, I owned a vast majority of the Zumiez shares. And my wife, Sonia, and I, we started a foundation called the Campion Foundation that had nothing to do with Zumiez. I can go back and forth because my world is Zumiez and then my foundation. And the Campion Foundation had two missions: to work on public lands, a lot of it in big landscapes in Alaska, like the Arctic, which ties into what you'd like to talk about here, Eliza, on climate, because it's resource extraction, oil and coal in the northern part of Alaska. But we also have a whole division or a whole mission working on homelessness, which is extremely appropriate or extremely front and center in all our lives here, especially in Seattle, where we struggle to house everybody. And there's tents and homelessness and people in need. Mm-hmm. All over our state, but particularly in the city of Seattle. Yeah. So I started that in 2005, the Campion Foundation, which was a C3, which means it's a nonprofit. And then I also started a C4, which means I could advocate more politically with elected officials, mostly federal for me, which is Congress, which is senators and House members. And the Campion Advocacy Fund, which is our C4, I started, I can't exactly remember, 2012, 2013. And we run that to this day. I have, Sonia and I have six or seven people that work with us. And the mission on that, we get a lot into climate. And I can speak to climate, not only as working through my work in the Arctic, which is rapidly melting because increased temperatures and difficulties, but also as the chairman and still involved in Zumiez and watch how climate has affected our stores. Zumiez sells a lot of snowboard equipment in the winter and winter wear, which has gotten very unpredictable because there's warmer temperatures and then storms and actually even fires in the last couple of years and different malls are in where malls get shut down. None of that compares in the last year though to the pandemic, where in March of 2020, we closed 700 doors and we chose to pay our full-time people. I have like 10,000 employees. I paid my full-timers as we start to open again, got them open, most of them a couple months later, They're still not all open yet. I have stores closed in Australia, some places in Eastern Canada. And then COVID, you'll get, some kid will get sick in a store. They're all masked. We're all, you know, we're going through all the protocols, CDC protocols, to keep employees and customers safe, but it still happens. So very complicated year, dealing with politics, dealing with climate, dealing with a pandemic, and all of us disagreeing about some of the center policies of what we should be doing in our country.
Absolutely. What degrees do you have, and where did you go to school?
So I went to O'Day High, and then I went to CLU. My degree's in political science, and my dad was a mailman, and I didn't have any scholarships. It was a very different time. I'm 73, so this was back in the late 60s, and I hardly remember I ever had a business class in my life. I learned moral values, learned how to think, but I was working in grocery stores to pay my tuition. And I worked for 5 years in grocery stores. I loved retail, didn't like the hours in grocery stores and whatever. But when I got my degree, I pushed and kind of a little bit aggressive sometimes. Got a job with JCPenney's for 9 years, loved retail, got sick of how they treated people. So I created, at the time it was called Above the Belt, which eventually became Zumiez in the early 90s. And our culture is all around how we treat the kid that works for us. Being recognized, teaching, learning, loving what you do, real competitive, and also recognizing and thanking. You know, we have a bunch of events. I've got an event coming up at the end of this week where I have 600 store managers, first time going to see them in 2 years in town. They're all vaccinated. They're all masked. It's all going to be outside. But it's a recognition ceremony and a training event as we go into holiday here and selling products. So I worked in retail my whole life, but my passion is politics. It's my degrees in political science.
Cool. Why did you start the Campion Advocacy Fund?
So I was able to... Zumiez, when we went public, had a lot of Zumiez stock and fund the Campion Foundation, but you can only do so much politically with that and advocate to elected officials about things they care about. And there was a Supreme Court case back in the early part of this last decade called Citizen United that gave you space to put more money into political races. And a lot of people think that's bad, I guess bad or good, but I wanted to be in that game to be able to support and talk to electeds about preserving the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the Arctic Ocean, the Western Arctic, and which I did. And then we had staff that worked for us that work with congressional staff to do the same thing. I lead trips up there. I've gone to DC a lot, spoken with elected officials. I actually have met and befriended back 10 years ago working on this issue, President Barack Obama, who I just absolutely have the greatest respect for, and how he pushed these issues, was able to speak to him about preserving the Arctic Refuge. Arctic Refuge has oil under the ground, somewhere between 5 and 10 billion barrels of oil, considerable amount. And in the Western Arctic, there's 2 trillion tons of coal west of... And in the middle is a place called Prudhoe Bay where there's an oil find now. So it's pre-manned with credible wildlife, essential for the cultural lives of the Athabascan, the Gwich'in people, and some Inupiats that live on the coast that still get most of their protein off the land. So I work with the political, in the congressional and the administrative when President Obama was president, with the White House and with Congress. We couldn't get it preserved, but we got it in a better space. Mm-hmm. And at the end, President Obama preserved the entire Arctic Ocean, 120 million acres of the Beaufort and Chukchi Sea, which is hugely important. It's the only territorial U.S. waters that are marine waters that in the northern tip of Alaska. Important to bowhead whales, important to ring seals, walruses, and of course, polar bears. Polar bears are the symbolism of climate, what's gone wrong. We've listed them under the Endangered Species Act, but we have no way to save them unless we get our human brains and our human ambition and moderate climate a little bit. So polar bears need ice to work around to be able to feed on seals that pop up in open leads and stuff. And in open water, they can't catch seals to eat. And if that's the case, they will probably not be present in America in less than 100 years.
Yeah. You've done a lot of work towards the fight to end homelessness. And I'm wondering if you've seen climate change intersect with the housing crisis. And if you
doubt, but I'm sorry, I cut you off before you finished the call. There's no doubt that it is part of it, but it's harder to make the connection. What has happened here in Seattle and on the West Coast, we've had this transformational change with technology, how we communicate. You and I are talking, I've never met you. We're talking, we got our pictures on, the waving my hands and going back and forth. And that's how we've run Zoomies in the last year, because we can't go out and meet with stores who are on Zoom and WebEx calls and doing all this. So Seattle is a hotbed from Microsoft to Amazon to, all early stage tech. And it created great wealth. It filled up a lot of housing and apartments and condos and whatever. So rents went from tripled in a period of 10 years. A lot of people that weren't working in tech, literally their salaries didn't triple in the last 10 years, and they got priced out of the market, which created this. There's a component, a mental health component, and I'm sure there's a component in abuse, of substance abuse, but for the most part, it was purely economic. If rents and cost of housing and rents tripled in the last 10 years or something like that, Elijah, people just didn't make that much. If you're working in the service industry and stuff, working in retail, you didn't triple your salaries. And I have no stores in downtown Seattle. I had one, I don't have it anymore. We're in the mall, so we're on all the burbs. My closest store in Seattle probably is Bellevue Square, South Center. But so it is a factor, but it's not the predominant factor. It's economic in this rapid transition with technology. These are different issues, but I feel very comfortable and feel, Sonia and I feel a moral imperative to work on both these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. How has your conservation work changed as the climate crisis has gotten worse?
So I didn't start working on climate. I started in the 70s when the year I started Zoomies, I was 30 years old. It was protecting our ancient forests in the Pacific Northwest. And there is a bird species that I bet you've never heard of called the spotted owl. You ever heard of spotted owls?
I don't think so.
No. Well, they need it. Their home range they fed on flying squirrels, and they needed a large home range, like 3,000 to 5,000 acres of old trees where flying squirrels were predominantly in older forests. So they were in trouble. Spotted owls are in trouble. I was working with Seattle Audubon, taught myself how to call owls, went out and we actually found owls, called them. They weren't protecting the trees. We sued. And it went through an evolution in the late 70s up into the early 90s. Became a national issue. When Bill Clinton became president, he within a year did the Northwest Forest Plan, preserved a great amount of the ancient forests that were left in Western Washington, Western Oregon, and the Northern California. So that's how I started. Now, those ancient forests that are left, including, I'm going to take you up to Alaska here in a second, are huge for carbon sequestration. They should be left in place because they're carbon sinks for as we emit for cars and buses. And I admit because I work in this business and we're trying to make it better, but I'm in the mall business and you get the oil powered car. So there's hypocrisy there on my part, even though I'm working to try and make it better to invent ways to get higher mileage cars and support Joe Biden's or President Biden's Build Back Better plan, the Green New Deal, that would have more electric cars and more electric stations and more technology, solar, wind, so we reverse what's happening here. And so it didn't start as climate. We weren't talking about it in the late 70s. But I could speak to it as the chairman of Zumiez, how it's affected my business. And I could speak to it, how it has vastly changed what's going on in Alaska, what they expect to do to make money versus the extraction industry versus what that's doing to our environment. Our largest national forest is in southeast Alaska. It's called the Tongass National Forest. It's about eight times bigger than the closest forest to Seattle, the Baker-Snoqualmie. And it's the largest temperate rainforest left. And it's of all the public lands and national forests left in the United States, it probably sequesters about half the carbon. That's how much old growth is left. So it's very important. Joe Biden, President Biden, just re-implemented what's called the ROTUS rule to stop all the logging on that, for climate reasons as well as diversity. And it's really important to salmon because the salmon streams, which are being affected by climate, we know it is. I just don't work on that.
Yeah. What was your biggest accomplishment regarding your conservation work in Alaska and all that you've done down there?
Oh, so far they haven't drilled for oil in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We haven't got it protected as wilderness, but we haven't lost it either. So someday we hope it'll be federally protected under the Wilderness Act. Say it should never be touched. It has, it's an amazing place. I've been there a couple dozen times. I've gone to camp with our Senator Maria Cantwell, showed her grizzly bears with cubs and saw wolverine and caribou. And she's a little nervous at the start, but then she got really into it. And she came back and became the Arctic champion. So we didn't lose 1 acre in Alaska to pro-development under President Trump, who I worked against. It was all just, oh, Arctic Refuge, he called it ANWR. We should drill, we should get the oil. Well, I just think it's more important to the Gwich'in for food security, the Athabascan people that have lived there for thousands of years, and more important to the diversity of wildlife. The caribou herd, the calves, it's called the porcupine herd, comes out of Canada. It's the longest land migration by any land mammal in the world. Goes 1,200 miles to calve right on the ocean on the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge, and then goes back into Canada in the winter. It speaks to the richness of the tundra grasses, and the longest aerial migration by any bird in the world is the Arctic tern that comes out of Antarctica, flies and nests on gravel bars on the rivers flowing to the Arctic Ocean on coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge, flies 12,500 miles each way, a round trip of 25,000 miles. Matter of fact, there's birds that nest in the coastal plain of the Arctic coming from every continent. One that I love to talk about is a bird called a wheat ear. And it's wheat and ear, one word, that in the winter, it's feeding under a water buffalo on the Serengeti in Tanzania, and springboks and cheetahs and lions and everything. And it packs it up towards spring, well, which would be going to fall, I guess, down there. Flies up through Egypt, over through Asia Minor, across to Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, up into Mongolia, over to Russia, across the northern Bering Sea into the Chukchi, and nest on the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge in the foothills. It's called the Brooks Range, and then reverses that at the end of the season and takes its young and goes all the way back across the Bering Strait into Siberia, down through Mongolia. You can just picture it. It's just the history of the world. So that sort of thing just fascinates me. If it's so important for nature, Why are we to say we need to change this? Maybe it's time for a little bit of patience.
Yeah.
And I truly believe if we put enough money into a good chunk could be put in with Biden's bill, his Green New Deal, through budget reconciliation, we can invent our way with some technologies, better solar, better wind, better dynamic, maybe it's safer nuclear. So it'd be less carbon emitting and more, you know, copacetic with humans and wildlife and air and floral and fauna, and, you know, so the earth can keep progressing.
Yeah, definitely. How has climate change and your conservation work and like interest impacted Zoomies, if it has at all?
I have 10,000 employees, a little older than you. I don't know how old you are. Most of them are 18 to 25. They love what I do. I don't go in there and talk about me. When I'm in Zoomies, and I'll be in front of 600 of them this Wednesday talking about where we're going, I brag on them, talk about them and how we teach them how they can grow as human beings. Those that are interested, they can get on my website, Camping Advocacy Fund, and see what I'm doing. And those that are really interested, I get in discussions with them. And we have a sustainability initiative at Zoomies. We're taking carbon out of the making of our product, but we sell a lot of brands like Vans, tennis shoes, and Nikes, and Santa Cruz skateboards, and and Thrasher, and all these different brands. So I can't be responsible if they're getting more sustainable, but we're working darn hard to become more sustainable ourselves. But products are made around the world, so it's really complicated, you know. A lot of it is oil derivatives, and then you got to put it on a cargo ship to get it to my distribution center in Long Beach, California. And then we ship it to 600 stores and UPS trucks across the country. So it becomes pretty hard. I do have an IMAX film coming out. And this was total how I think of Zoomies. This place needs a good marketing because not that many people see the art because it's so remote, hard to get there, and expensive to get to. And I did it with a photographer friend of mine who became we did this IMAX movie. His name's Florian Schultz. He's a National Geographic photographer. And the movie's ready, but IMAX theaters aren't open yet. And the movie's called The Arctic, Our Last Great Wilderness. And it's really good. And it shows you the beauty of a place you can't see on the big screen. It'll be at Pacific Science Center.
Oh, cool. And
you better go see it because you're interested in this stuff. Yeah, it's going to be really good. A lot of wildlife. And it is one of the voices is a woman named Princess, who is Athabaskan Gwich'in, who had an HBO series, Molly and Denali, about her people. And she's a great friend. And I've lobbied with her on these issues in Washington, D.C., and a real solid person. So. And Zoomies, they know that, they know what I care for, but when I'm in front of them, I don't talk about myself. I talk about Zoomies. I talk about them. I talk about how we all still need to grow. One of the greatest things, I'm this old guy, I'm 73. I'm learning all the time. And look at how technologies change. When first opened up Zoomies, you had a regular phone, you're picking up. Now it's all tech. It's all online. It's what we call omni-channel. We can deliver it to your house. I mean, all this is same, or you can go in a store and buy it. And so we're not only teaching, but we're learning all the time too. But what hasn't changed is the respect for the individual, respect for the employee, the teaching the employee to push him or her to be aggressive and fill the customer's needs and grow and take market share from other companies. And that's how we got this 600 stores. And you got to love what you do. Mm-hmm. I think here I am sitting talking to you. You can kind of tell I still have a passion for this. You know, it's like, I love this stuff. And when you see a grizzly bear, I've had the honor of seeing polar bears, and they kind of look at you. They don't know what the heck you are. And it's just like, man, this is just total nature what it is. But I'll get in front of a bunch of Zoomies kids, or a kid has incredible sale. We have these events we're on our best sales kids. That's the same way there. The kids like, oh, I'm good at what I do. I imagine just, you got your own podcast, you're probably pretty high achiever. You're probably pretty good at what you do in different parts of your life. And I am, I guess, in some respects, but it's always like, I'm not ready to say, oh yeah, let somebody else do it. I want to be in the mix and help shape this for climate, for public lands, for the Arctic, for Zoomies, you know, and.
Yeah. Have you thought about, or I guess, what are some ways that you have been trying to make Zoomies more more green or more environmentally conscious?
So we have a corporate social responsibility initiative. One of them is sustainability, one of them is empowerment, and, you know, teaching all this stuff to make the kids better. But I'm in the mall business making clothes halfway around the world in Asia. Not all of it, but a good part of it. And so to make Zoomies more sustainable is a big initiative of ours, how you do that. I mean, look at shoes, skateboard shoes. You buy a pair of shoes, comes in a box, right? We get them in 10,000 pairs at a time. What if you didn't have them in a box? What if you had them just like a little string around them or something? So you kept the sizes together, you need two of them. You know, that would be a significant savings on shipment and for all that stuff we got to do. How we, a kid buys something in a store, it's got to go in a bag. Is it a plastic bag? Is it a paper bag? What's the cost of that? Will we still use plastic because the logo is really good? It's all post-consumer waste and recycled plastic. But paper bags are heavier, cost more to ship, which is a UPS, which is a energy use and stuff. So it's really complicated how we think about it and what we're doing with it. And then, of course, the kids are talking about it too. And maybe one of the biggest things we can do is we teach them to advocate, they go to their elected officials. Like, you know, if you're following politics, what it's going on now. Murray and Cantwell are great, great friends. Maria Cantwell, Patty Murray, I've known them forever. I've known Maria Cantwell for 40 years when she came to our stage. Great friend and powerful legislators. But like in Arizona, I have like 20 some stores. And new senator from down there, Kristen Sinema, great lady. I've talked to her about homelessness. I've talked to her about the Arctic, trying to make her understand it. Great empathy for all of us, but thinks about it differently for the citizens of Arizona as we do up here in our state. We're pretty, especially in Western Washington, we're extremely progressive green, right? We like our green spaces, like our seeing our mountains and the sky clear. So there's a great role for Zoomies kids from different parts of the country to advocate for this. They want to get there. They need government's help to make this transition, to make it a more cleaner, safe, you know, slow the increase in temperature, what that's doing to Earth with fires and, you know, and the least among us in different communities in different parts of the country and the world. You know, you got to figure China now is the biggest emitter. And China and India, we're, I think, number three now, but per person, carbon emissions, we're the biggest. In China, you know, we have like 350 million people. China has about 4 to 5 times that amount. So that's why they're the biggest. They all want to be like us. Look at us in a Sunday afternoon, right? We're warm and we're inside and we're talking to each other. You know, everybody wants that, right?
Yeah. Why did you choose to call Zoomies?
We started under a different name, then I had to change it. It started as Above the Belt, but then we were in all kinds of stuff, especially with the skate hard goods. And I felt it needed a new name. And I actually came up with the name of Young and Fast, Zoom, Zoom, Zoom. And then a creative friend of mine that did some design work for our stores, I said, okay, I love the name Zoomies. Z is a great logo on teenage clothes or graphics. Screw up the name. And he screwed up, you know, Zoomies or whatever to Zoomiez. So it means absolutely nothing except fun and skate and, you know, a good time and feeling good about yourself and kids acting out in good ways. And, you know, and they really believe in it. And it's gone from Coastal to Street now, you know, as we've taken this across the country and around the world. So, you know, it's graffiti, it's street, it's cultural, it's incredibly culturally diverse, it's gay, it's straight, it's trans, it's, you know, all things that my customer is 14 to 24, basically. And we just have a lot of fun. If you work there, you probably love what you do.
Yeah.
And I am been there 43 years. I still like what I do.
Yeah. Did you like snowboard or skate when you were younger?
So I never skated. I've snowboarded since the late 80s for like 30 some years. I used to ski, and then that got going with Jake Burton and Tom Sims were Burton Snowboards, huge market share. And I was Zumiez was the first to bring Burton snow products in the malls in the US. That was 1989. And when I did get into his first surf, Gotcha, Quicksilver, Hurley, Billabong, I immediately got in skate soft goods, which are t-shirts. What I did different, I put skate hard goods in stores in the back of stores where they still are now. Big graphics in the backs of stores. And so we sell lots and lots of skate. Snow because of climate, because we've gone into partially climate change across the northern tier of the country here to New York. But as we've gone into Southern Cal, across to Florida, warmer climates where there's no snow and you get east of Southern Cal, there's no mountains for the most part. So we sell less of that, but we sell a ton of skateboard stuff. But I never skated.
Cool.
I carried them because you could sell a lot of them. And then I could do a lot of good work saving the Arctic. Might work on homelessness. Zumiez has a foundation too that is very different than the Campion Foundation. I know how to make inexpensive clothes in Asia. And every year, Zumiez Foundation, it's our mission to give away clothes to in cold weather climates, jackets, sweatshirts, t-shirts, knit hats, and socks, and polar fleece blankets to homeless shelters. And we have 200 shelters we give to from here to New York, down into California. And we give away every year about 200,000 articles of clothing.
That's amazing. And we don't,
it's awesome. And we don't talk about it. We don't brag about it. We do internally, we know, and we have these events. I'll stand up and talk about it. You lose a lot of your body heat if you're out in the street, sleeping out street night through your head. I can buy a good acrylic beanie and put it on your head, or you have wet socks. You can't imagine. You got to sleep overnight outside. You got wet socks, a dry pair of socks. It just takes away just a skosh, a little bit of human suffering as these people try to navigate their lives where they are and trying to get back in a warm environment, you know, a home or an apartment or a shelter or some.
Yeah.
What's amazing is my employees, when we do these events, we have our big marketing films for the employees we review the year. And we talk about on the film what the foundation has done. Kids are just so freaking stoked. They're just like, just screaming because they're part of something bigger. You want to be part of something bigger. That's why you're taking your time to do this, right? You want to be part of this change of climate, whatever it is. Most Zumiez kids do too. And so, yeah, I've applied my same passion to that as I do when I work with my nonprofits, with the Gwinchin or the Arctic or polar bears or with homelessness stuff.
Yeah, that's very, that's incredible. What does climate justice and environmental justice mean to you and your work?
So that's a newer term. It's great. And it was always conservationists or elitists on the coast, not in the middle of the country. We talk about climate change, but it's usually the least among us, which would be the multicultural Latinx or Black communities that live in sometimes in not as comfortable, not as it, like inner city in LA. Say my daughter teaches dance in LA. She lives there and it's a great community. It's like 10, 15 million people. But climate justice there means something totally different than it does for us in the Pacific Northwest. And it's often where coal fire plants or other energy plants are in their communities, or air is dirtier as temperatures get warmer, they suffer more, right? It's just harder to live. But then I can see it at the other end, up in the northern tip of Alaska with the Gwich'in, where a majority of their food security comes off the land. Caribou, moose, and they fish. And that's how they eat, because it's very expensive. So as climate change changes migration routes or suppresses a population of the caribou herds, then they suffer. They have food security issues. And it's becoming way more erratic because of seasons, because of snow, because the Gwich'in live just south of the first major northern mountain range called the Brooks Range. And the caribou, they hunt them in spring and fall on the migration routes. And because of climate, their migration routes get shorter. Oftentimes their herds shrink. They're not a successful calving. And so that's a huge reduction in food for them. And to replace that nourishment, then it gets very expensive. So I've seen it for kind of totally different part of it. I spend time in the Methow Valley. I don't know if, well, yeah, because that's where I met you through Ben Martyrs, Derek. I work with him over there sometimes. And the fires over there, people losing their homes and the smoke. And for like a month at a time, you're existing, you walk outside, there's smoke. So, more people buying air filters. And I did some stuff with a nonprofit called Room One, where I bought air filters, which they gave to their sick people, older people who couldn't afford it, sit-ins and stuff. So made their air a little cleaner inside. So it could take climate justice could take on a million different meanings. And most of it, we just have it. It's just not in our daily conversations. But you look at the southern part of the Sierra, the northern part of Africa, and drought, what that does with population growth and all those countries there, and destabilized politically and stuff. It's all around how they historically, they herded animals and grew grains and stuff. And because of drought and stuff, it becomes very unstable. That's not on our, I never talk about that. It's just there, and people suffer from this, that we can figure out, and the earth can still grow economically and say grow more ethically if we get climate figured out. I got to tell you, you look at how we've handled this pandemic, and we all have, it would really all benefit if we handled the pandemic right. Plus, we lost 600,000 people in this country. It was really hard for Zoomies to navigate this and to mandate vaccines now for my managers on up in our company and to be sensitive about it. We can't get that right. You can just understand with all the different economic different directions and how people make money with extractive industries, how hard it's going to be to get climate right. We're going to have to put a lot of money in R&D and research and development, and hopefully invent our way out of some of this.
Yeah. What's the most valuable thing you think you've learned over your career?
Loving what you do. I'm so spoiled. I've had four jobs in my life, and I've worked since I was 14, and I'm 73, and probably empathy mm-hmm. for everybody, not like, oh, look at me, aren't I the neat guy because, I'm the chairman of Zoomies, or aren't I the neat guy because I go visit the Arctic. Try to have empathy in the pace we move in our society now, and with technology and stuff, to take a step back, and sometimes it's talking to people my own age or even older and say, yeah, what do you think? What was it like? Or sometimes it's talking to the new manager with purple hair that's worked for me for 1 year in South Carolina or South Florida, where half their store is the customer and the player speaking Spanish, and their world is so different than mine. And it's like, okay, what is this about? The commonality is a skateboard or a real cool t-shirt, but what their life's about, I just love that. And being able to listen and try to understand, but then to have empathy so I care about it rather than just dismiss it.
Yeah.
Having empathy with what we know now because of technology and everything that comes at you daily, what you can see and different opinions, it's hard to do. I mean, it's just really, really hard to do, but I think it's really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on to How to Save the Planet. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
I would end by saying it's sure worth saving, even like where we live. So, yeah.
That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to subscribe to How to Save the Planet wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.